You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Now you hear the humming. That's Tommy Tucker on WWL.
Well, I know that.
I have to introduce you. That's my
that
job.
That is the most iconic humming, really.
Really? Is it?
In my own mind. Yes, absolutely. All right, you ready for this?
I am ready.
We had the research and development guys and gals do some work while I was on vacation.
Oh, R&D was busy. Huh?
Yes, they were, indeed. And so we have a Taking It to the Tech survey.
Ooh.
All right? So we're going to ask a question of you, the audience, to take your pulse and see what's on your mind, and then we share some of the more popular and interesting results around 9 o'clock. Not necessarily the most popular, but the most more popular and more interesting. You with me?
I'm with you. So it's not only ranked by what everybody says the most, but what you find the most interesting, that the listeners would find the most interesting.
We are taking the pulse, if you will, and also sampling the creativity of the audience. We are challenging the creativity.
Finger
of the
on
audience.
The carotid.
Hmm?
Taking the pulse.
I don't think you can say that on the air.
No, it's okay. You can say it.
Anyway, so I'm going to pose a question throughout the morning. You can text whatever pops into your mind at 504-260-1870. We'll wrap it up later.
So what's the question?
Well, here we go. WWL Monday Morning Audience Survey. Top answers will be revealed later. What's something you could say to a holiday company, to your holiday company, about their pet that could mistakenly think you were talking about their kids and get their feelings hurt?
All right, so you have visitors coming to town. They're bringing their pets with them.
Right.
Something you may say
about the pets,
about the pet,
but they think you're talking about their kids and it gets their feelings hurt.
All right, but it could also hurt their feelings if they knew you were talking about their pet too. But.
Well, primarily though, it would be like, for example, if you were to say, do they always smell like that? You see where the,
yeah,
where the
you wouldn't want to, people expect their
you'd be talking
pets
about the
to
pet.
Smell.
But they would think you're talking about the kid.
Yeah, your kid's not supposed to stay.
And then, you know, we could be cleaning house at R&D later on today. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, text your answer in the 504-260-1870. Mike D'Antonio, talking about this.
Maybe the R guys lose their job, but the D guys get
we'll
to
see
stay.
How it goes, yes. But anyway, text it in. So the premise is you say something about the people's pets.
No, I understand.
But they think
takes a lot
you're
of
talking about their kids. Yeah. Well, again, it's research and development, so there's some research involved and also some development involved. Right?
Yeah, we maybe need a little more development.
All right, so we'll take a break, and then we'll be back with Mike D'Antonio here on WWL. All right, 6:15, so the fog is bad where it is and where it's not. It's not. I know that sounds silly to say it that way, but I don't know what else to tell you, because if you hit a pocket of it, it's bad. They're convoying both ways on the causeway. Highs today of 74, 76 tomorrow, 72 on Wednesday, 72 Thursday, 76 Friday, so it's going to be a warm Christmas. But then they're saying maybe by New Year's week, New Year's Eve week, however you want to phrase it, highs in the 50s. So we're going to miss it by about a week with the cool weather for Christmas, but that's the way it is here. It's a roll of the dice, right? Mike D'Antonio joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk, talk about this big Saints win yesterday. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing good, Tommy.
I am. Tell you what, I was pretty impressed yesterday with Charlie Smith.
Yeah. You know, the Saints got off to kind of a slow start in first quarter and even into the second, but then it started to click. And that's something I was telling Bobby in the pregame. It's almost sort of the MO for this team. But Charlie Smith, he's got a great story and how he got into the NFL. And everybody's got a unique story. Mm-hmm. When you get into a profession that only 2,000 people and even less than that doing this entire world, it's really remarkable. But he's always calm about how things work out. You know, everything's even keel with Charlie. So you maybe have something there.
I think.
Because, you know, one thing, I mean, you know it. We've talked about this. Kickers are like golfers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they got talent. All of them can kick. But then it gets to the point of between your ears sometimes. And that's when things start to mess up.
And to that point, the 61-yarder, if you're trying to bust a drive using golfing parlance, if you're trying to really rip a drive, chances are you come over the top a little bit, which is what he was trying to do with that 61-yard field goal. But what I find really encouraging is the consistency with the shorter kicks that he's made.
That's the biggest surprise for me, because I'll be honest with you, and watching him sometimes kick in practice, he was not the most consistent guy. Was not. He was a guy that could, man, he'd bang it 55, 58, and then he'd miss a 38-yarder or a 45-yarder and, you know, that sort of thing. But he has become a much more consistent kicker than I thought we'd see. I thought that'd be a little bit more erraticism with him as a kicker. But, you know, he's a big guy for a kicker.
He's a big man. He is 6'4", right?
We were at the Morial Center to do pre-Super Bowl coverage, and he's just standing up. I don't think anybody really knew kind of who he was. Mm-hmm. I walked up to him. We started talking. I asked him if he could come on with us and do sports talk, and he was like, yeah. And then we took kind of a team picture of him and I and Bobby and Steve. Now, Bobby says he started out a little over 6'4", but he says that cement, you know, he walks on every day has shortened him a little bit. There ain't no doubt Charlie Smith 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
big guy.
And that to me surprised me exactly how tall he is, because, you know, most kickers in this league, that's not, you know, height wise.
Well, you went from Blake Groupie, who was Alf on a shelf, no disrespect, because I'm not a big person myself, but I'm just saying, you go from him to, and look, it's the big man's going to have the advantage, not necessarily in terms of accuracy, but in terms of distance. The bigger guy, it's physics, is going to hit it farther, he's going to kick it farther, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and he talked about just trying to get better at his craft from a technique standpoint. That was the big thing for him. Bringing up about what do you want to do this offseason to try to get yourself a full-time spot. And he was pretty open about the fact that, you know, I have to get better as a technician and as a guy that can approach the ball and my follow-through and everything. He sounded almost just like a golfer. I mean, you know, you kind of hear it a little bit in his tone, and that's why – you know, you look at a lot of these kickers that come out of college the regular way. You know, they play in high school and in college into the NFL. A lot of the connected dots are, one, they're soccer players, and then, two, golfers. Blake Groupie was like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was soccer player, golfer. And, you know, a lot of them have kind of those connected dots. And I think eventually you're going to see more and more where – man, you like 55, 60-yard field goals are sort of routine today. Hey, kid, get out there and kick it.
See him.
You know, years ago, that would have been, what? Hey, I'm not putting my kicker out there for a 60-yard kick.
To see him kick that ball from the fleur-de-lis and have it easily fly into the stands, he had some distance on that. He had some leg on it. Let me take a break. We'll pick
power.
It up. We come back. And look, I don't mean to start talking about field goals, but he did have five of them and it tied a Saints record for most in a game. So you know what? Kudos to Charlie Smith. We'll talk about Chris Olave, Tyler Shuck, and more when we come back. 621 traffic now, WWL. Yeah, they missed a touchdown right before that. 628, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. Mike, a couple of words about Taysom Hill.
He's one of one.
Yeah.
He's the most unique football player I've ever seen to do that many things, that good. You really watching something in your lifetime you probably won't see again. as a runner, receiver, throws the touchdown pass, plays special teams. I mean, you know, it's you're really watching something special. And he was so emotional after the game. And I think you sort of know that.
I think he was
trying to tell you this is going to be the last time I'm going to play in this stadium in that black and gold uniform or whatever they were wearing yesterday, uniform-wise. But, you know, he's a unique talent as a football player because people always ask me this time of year, is that guy in college football like Taysom Hill? And I'm like, come on. That's when you know you've really done something. You get compared, or people are trying to compare somebody to you, and he's one of a kind.
He was the first guy since what?
Frank Gifford?
Well, I think 70-something. They said 74. I heard yesterday on the radio, Pete, somebody or the other, or something that had the 3,000-yard the combination thing. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I could have heard. It's the one I heard it during the broadcast. But it's not. It's like a every what 30, 40, 50 years kind of thing. You get one of these guys?
Because that is the one guy in the NFL in say, recent times. We kind of all remember Frank being an announcer. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of us watch Frank actually play. And that Frank did all of that as a runner, receiver. He played defensive back. He threw the football. You're really watching something of a guy that's, again, one of one. That you cannot compare him to any other guy in the Super Bowl era of the National Football League.
I would love to see him play on defense, although he does a little bit on special teams, but I would love to see him play defense.
Dennis Allen told Bobby and I a story about he was trying to get Sean Payton to let him put him at outside linebacker.
I could see it. We got to take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Mike Dettelier, our guest, talking Saints and their winning streak, and let's hope they can extend it for two more games. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 6:45, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mike Dettelier about the Saints game yesterday. Mike, Chris Olave, you know, had the drop earlier. It would have been a tough catch, but he could have had it. Boy, you know, inconsistent would probably be a good way to describe Chris Olave. Thoughts?
My thing with him is how much he's gotten better when Tyler Shuck's been in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
That, okay, I got confidence that you're going to get me the ball. Now, yeah, every once in a while he'll have a drop, that sort of thing. But his play over the last month, you can see it has gradually gotten better. And more confidence. Same thing with Juwan Johnson. You know, and yesterday you could see that they watched a lot of film of what happened with Jacksonville against the Jets. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence came out and it was bang, bang, bang. Man, they threw it all over the field and they torched the Jets too. But to get, you know, your two main guys in the receiving part, Juwan Johnson, Chris Olave, more and more involved. Okay, at running back, okay, you Taysom played really good yesterday, but you got Audric Estime.
But you know what? I wanted to ask you about that. Let me jump in for a second because I was thinking about this during the game yesterday. Preseason, what are we talking about? We're talking about can Kendre Miller finally be healthy? We're talking about Devin Neal. What's he going to show? Alvin Kamara, what's he got left in the tank? And it goes to show you what a game of attrition it is because who thought that we would be talking about Audric Estime?
Yeah.
The second carrier behind Taysom Hill yesterday with five, I think he had five carries for 19 yards. So it just, man, the injuries in the NFL, is it getting worse or not? I'm thinking about the offensive line, although they said the Jets started the same five people. A lot of good it did them throughout the season. It's hard to, man, I'm going to tell you what, it's really hard to figure out who you're going to be playing with at the end of the season. And it goes to depth and how do you build that?
And a really talented quarterback can erase some of those ills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just like with Drew years ago, and I'm not trying to compare Drew Brees and Tyler Shuck, but I think the confidence that you have in this young quarterback is being seen in front of your very eyes. Okay, you Spencer Rattler, and that's all great. But there's a difference. He is winning games for you. And, okay, you might say, the Jets, they're not very good. Okay, that's the Jets' problem.
Mm-hmm.
The Saints got enough of their own. You've got to be able to overcome those injuries. Sometimes it's tough because, okay, if you lose a guy, let's say 10 games into the year, it's not a guy on the side of the road with his hand up, hey, I'm ready to play. You got to go out and find a guy that'll fit what you're doing. If it's an offense, defense, special teams. I think a little bit, Tommy, what's getting missed in all of this,
mm-hmm.
how good the defense has played.
Yep.
Man, you got to give Brandon Staley and company
I was going to pick that up after the
credit.
Break, but definitely. The young secondary,
man,
especially.
With the older guys, yep. younger guys, Cam and DeMario, Jonas Sanker, what he's been able to do as a starting safety. Chase Young, 10 games, 7 sacks. Pretty strong.
And Cam Jordan with the back-to-back sacks yesterday.
Yeah, and so you getting it pieced together on both sides. But, you know, because of the quarterback, it sort of is soaking up all the air in the room. But how good this defense has played is really something when you talk to other people in the league or you do shows outside the area, they bring up, man, what's going on with the Saints defense? They're really playing pretty well. Brandon Staley, I give him a lot of credit. He's been able to make this work. And he doesn't have all the pieces of the puzzle. You talk about you only gave up 195 yards total offense yesterday. That's nothing in this league.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. You know, the other thing, when you look at the Saints' schedule, the way it started out with Seattle and Buffalo and the Patriots and the Bears, that's some pretty good, and the Rams, that's some pretty good teams they played, right?
I would say look where they look where they are today. And then you finish off with the Jets and the Titans. And who knows what team you're going to catch with Atlanta again
right.
To finish it off. And the NFC South, how crazy that's going to be because it's been Panthers. You win one, you lose one. You win one, you lose one. Then the Bucs have seemingly fallen apart at the seams with an opportunity yesterday to win, and it came apart. The NFC South has been sort of wild, but how it finishes with the Saints – because this coming Sunday against the Titans, that's a very winnable game against a team who's got their own share of major problems.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back with Mike Tellier, 650, 10 till 7. Traffic now, WWL.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having 4 kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
From Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters, WWL Traffic Center, I'm Courtney P. Do have dense fog advisory in the area and on our bridges over water. You're going to see that linger into the afternoon. So over on the causeway from the North Shore to the South Shore, we do have rolling convoy there. Things a bit slower. And as you make your way from the South Shore to the North Shore, have one lane open with a mile per hour restriction of 45 miles per hour. I-10 East Kenner 2 downtown New Orleans has some light congestion happen right around veterans that eases pretty quickly, remains clear to downtown from there. I-10 West, New Orleans East to downtown, a slowdown begins at Crowder, little heavy in the Morrison Curve, improves at the high rise. Downtown Elevated and the flyover are running at speed. Crescent City Connection, West Bank to downtown, have some light congestion as you cross the river. No delays on the Huey P. Long, however, a heads up over on 90 in and around Homewood, still seeing some pockets of heavy congestion due to visibility issues lingering in the area. This has been a look at traffic with Courtney P. on WWL.
652, still can't see the Crescent City Connection from Boydrison Magazine. That's how bad the fog is. But let me tell you about the great loan products, if I may, that are waiting for you right now at 5th District Savings Bank, as clear as the light of day. Mortgages might be a little higher than we're used to, but 5th District Savings Bank still has some great loan products that can get you into the home of your dreams. They helped me out. I know that when I bought my first house in Algiers back in 86. I didn't know what to do. It was in Algiers. So my dad said, well, boy, go get yourself a mortgage at 5th District. And that's what I did. And then I stuck with them when I built my dream home in Belchase in 93. And they've been around for God only knows how many people since 1926. Why don't you call my friends, and they are my friends, at 5th District Savings Bank and see what they can do for you. 5th District Savings Bank's expanded their line of mortgage loan products to suit your needs and budget, and they still offer that friendly local service that's kept me a customer since 86 and New Orleans area folks in their home since 1926. Make 5th District your first stop with offices on the West Bank, the East Bank, and North Shore. Call them 504-363-6505 or go to 5thdistrict.com. 5th District Savings Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Go to 5thdistrict.com. 657, 3 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Mike, tell us about the second guest today.
At 6:30, we'll start second guest at 4 o'clock, myself along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Mm-hmm. And at 6:30, we throw it to the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show. Mike Haas joins us, and Kellen Moore will be on with us, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. His guest tonight will be Terry Joseph, who is a passing game coordinator, so to speak, on the defensive side, coaching in the secondary. Also, too, at 5:35, we haven't heard his voice in a while, Willie Fritz, the head football coach of the Houston Cougars, joins us. We started Tulane Tuesdays with Coach Fritz, and he's agreed to come on with us tonight, less than a week before the Texas Bowl when he plays the LSU Tigers.
Small world, isn't it? Who do you think defensively played their last game in the Dome yesterday?
Man, you know, Cam Jordan had all the family. You know, they had the Cam kind of head signs and kind of all the different looks he had on there. And Cam has always talked about playing it year to year and taking a little time off and then thinking about it. But, man, when your family's out there and all those little signs and everything, it sort of gives you an indication at least he's thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And DeMario Davis says, he's got enough in the tank to play another year if he wants to. To watch him play at his age in this league is remarkable. It's a young man's league. Mm-hmm. And how well he plays still today is remarkable. And he has made similar comments to Cam Jordan that I would like to take a little time away from here and think about it. Because initially, you know, it gets to be a long season. And you think about it, you know, maybe this is it for me. Do I want to put my body and everything that you have to do to get ready to play? And but yesterday to have that entire family there sort of kind of tips you off a little bit that maybe, just maybe, something might happen in the off season. And he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. That's all I know.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting when you say that, though, because it's not like going back to golf, hit a bucket of balls at the range. This is
not
involvement. This is commitment. You got to be all the way in from pretty much the end of the previous season until the next season if you're going to make a run at this. So we'll see.
Physically and mentally. That's why just a few people can actually do it in this world.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Mike
Dettelier,
WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. We'll be listening for the second guest this evening, starting at 4 o'clock. Silver Slipper Casino on a beach, Hancock County, Mississippi. Jeff Palermo talking LSU. We come back. Hi, Dave. Well, we mentioned earlier we had our Taking It to the Text survey going on this morning, right?
Yes.
And the question is this. What we do is we ask a question of the audience to see what they're thinking and give them a chance to be creative, and then we share some of the more popular and interesting results around 9 o'clock. So the question this morning is, WWL Monday Morning Audience Surveyed, here's your question. Something that you could say to holiday visitors about their pet that they could mistakenly think you were talking about or referring to their kids and accidentally get their feelings hurt.
So someone's coming and staying at your house, they're bringing their pets and their kids with them. Something you could say you meant about the pets, but they thought was about the children.
For example, somebody texted in and said, nobody's coming to my house with pets. No, that's not what we're looking for, but that is a response, I guess, that we'll take. But
it's a response.
Somebody else said, can you please make sure they use the bathroom outside this year? So, see, that would be something that would be construed or misconstrued, if you will, or as Archie Bunker used to say, misconstrued. 504-260-1870.
Why would you want my kid to go potty in the yard?
504-260-1870. Text your answers there, and we'll reveal them later on to see what the audience came up with, if, in fact, they came up with anything. We'll talk to Jeff Palermo when we come back.
R&D.
About those LSU Tigers and taking on the Houston Cougars in the, the Dingle Ringle?
Texas Bowl?
Texas Bowl. Houston Somebody's Bowl? Sponsoring it. I don't know. We'll talk about that when
Doesn't
we return
matter,
on WWL. 7:14 and a half, foggy, still can't see the Crescent City Connection from Poydras and Magazine, where we happen to be located on the 8th floor because of the fog. They are convoying on a causeway both directions. You can't pass while they're convoying. Keep that in mind. And otherwise, just be careful. No flashers unless you're stopped, and put the headlights on. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, Weekend 1 of the College Football Playoffs in the books. Meanwhile, back at LSU. How you doing, Jeff?
I am doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm okay, sir. Give me your thoughts on the first weekend of college football playoffs.
Well, I thought we had two compelling games and then two blowouts, unfortunately. And, I don't know if this ends the debate on allowing the group of six teams into the college football playoff. We're probably heading to an expansion anyways, but one of the things that I just feel, football is not the same as basketball. Part of this tournament is set up to try to create a bit of a Cinderella story. One of these teams, like a Tulane, like a James Madison, comes in and beats one of the big boys and advances in the playoffs. In basketball, it's much easier to do. In basketball, you can have a night where, as a Cinderella, you're making all your shots and the other team isn't, or the ball bounces your way a couple times, and all of a sudden, you're able to knock off a 2 seed, a 3 seed, a 1 seed, whatever it may be. In football, it's so much more about who's bigger, faster, stronger. The physicality at the who can dominate at the line of the scrimmage. And when you're not as talented, when you're not as big, and when you're not as strong, it's just much more difficult for those inferior teams to beat a superior team. I think you saw that this past weekend.
So to put James Madison in and leave Notre Dame out is kind of silly.
In my mind, it is.
Yeah.
I think there also needs to be just some sort of, okay, it's great that Tulane won the American Athletic Conference. It's great that James Madison won the Sun Belt Conference. Mm-hmm. But did you beat anybody to really prove, other than the peers in your league that are not in the same level as those teams in the SEC and in the Big Ten? And in the ACC, I understand Tulane beat Duke, and so that's a nice win for him. But for a team like James Madison to only play one Power Four school and lose by whatever it was, I can't remember what the total was. It wasn't close. Mm-hmm. They played Louisville. They got blown out by Louisville. And then for them to then get in just because they won the Sun Belt Conference, with all due respect to the Sun Belt, there's great teams, there's great programs, but they're not at the same level as as the Oregons of the world or the Ole Misses of the world. Those, they're just not there. And so I think there needs to be a little bit more criteria into, I've always said this, and even when we had the 14 playoff, there was always maybe a team in there that I'm like, okay, they only like beat one top 25 team, but yet they're in there, and yet a team that had two losses and played multiple top 25 teams. To me, if you can't beat a top 25 team during the season, you shouldn't be in there. Now, under my, I guess, the Palermo rule, Tulane would have gotten in because they would have beaten in North Texas in the American Athletic Conference. So, okay, they beat North Texas, top 25 team. But for a team like James Madison that had not beaten anyone of, you know, had not beaten a strong opponent all season long, I don't know. I mean, I agree with what Nick Saban said. In the Major League Baseball playoffs, we don't allow all of a sudden the AAA champion to play in the World Series. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird way of doing it. But also, Tommy, the college football playoffs, the college football championship, it's never been settled in a way that I think most people can agree with. So probably in the end, I think we're going to be looking at a 16-team expansion. Who knows? This thing may balloon to 24 in the next 5-10 years. But maybe that way, with the 16, a team like Notre Dame gets in. A team like Vanderbilt gets in. I think those teams right there, Notre Dame and Vanderbilt, much more worthy than what we saw with the Tulane and James Madison.
All right, we're going to talk LSU-Houston when we come back. I just wanted to pick your brain about the college football playoffs because it's kind of pretty much what I thought as well. It's like in basketball, even at that, first of all, there's more universities that play basketball can field a basketball team because it's a much smaller program, right? And the game itself is different, as you alluded to. And even with that, it's rare that lightning will strike. It will occasionally, but rarely does it. But football, it's a completely different animal. 720, we'll talk LSU and bowl game with Houston when we come back. Right now, traffic, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. It's a weird kind of bowl. I'm going to tell you what, LSU playing Houston in the Texas Bowl with Lane Kiffin probably not actively involved, I guess. I don't know. Players opting out, transfer portal. Tell me the story, Jeff.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. Yeah. We haven't really had much information as far as how preparation is going on. We did get a photo of Lane Kiffin watching practice and standing right next to Frank Wilson. And what was interesting was Garrett Nussmeier was lined up as the quarterback in that shot. But we're not expecting Garrett Nussmeier to play. We're not expecting a lot of LSU Tigers that were part of this 2025 team to play. No Harold Perkins, it doesn't look like. Josh Thompson on the offensive line, the Weeks brothers, they're most likely not playing. AJ Halsey not playing, Mansoor Delane, a consensus All-American at cornerback not playing. So you got a lot of your star players who are not in this game. The team, I believe, leaves for Houston to continue preparations on Christmas Eve. So a little bit of a makeshift offensive line. You'll have different linebackers out there than you're accustomed to. So, and of course, Michael Van Buren will be your starting quarterback for LSU in the game.
What about recruiting and transfer portal? And what do we know about that in terms of who is indicating? Because we don't know until January 2nd, right? That's when they...
Right. Right now, the biggest name that's dropped for LSU is Carius Kern, and he could still play in the bowl game. In fact, Juwan Johnson is another name that has entered the transfer portal, but he still plans on playing. You know, and some of this is the portal isn't officially open, or you cannot enter your name officially, or I guess it becomes open, on January 2nd. So, and then there's just some players that are putting their name out there right now just to kind of test the waters to see if there's kind of through back channels if there's any interest in them, what it may be. So there's still a possibility, a guy like Terrius Kern, because I would say that's the biggest shocker the one that's the most impactful is probably the best way to put it. Most impactful guy off of this 2025 team that has decided to enter the transfer portal, because it really seemed like Kern, a guy who's just completed his freshman season, would have a great opportunity to start somewhere on a rebuilt offensive line next year, a five-star prospect out of Arkansas. You hate to lose him for one season. Mm-hmm. He may have been told by Lane Kiffin and the staff that, and of course, NIL money is a big part of this, so he may have received word it's not going to be as much next season as it was this year, or wasn't as much as he was hoping for. So he puts his name in the transfer portal, gets an idea of what else is out there, and who knows? There's still the possibility to bring him back. But so he may play in this game. I think you might have a few guys that are in the transfer portal, but we'll just still go ahead and play the game, finish it out, and then really hope that, all we're seeing at this point, Tommy, is guys losing, LSU losing guys. Mm-hmm. The real fun really will not begin until January 2nd when the portal opens. And we heard Lane Kiffin in his opening press conference. He can't wait for the portal to open. He can't wait to pitch this plan to some of the great players across the country that are looking for another spot, especially at the quarterback position. So it'll be a lot of fun to see. It'll be wild to see just how many kids end up committing or signing with LSU out of the transfer portal, and how many he's bringing with him from Ole Miss as well.
It's a weird position because it's kind of like get the bowl game out of the way, right? I mean,
you got to get the bowl game out of the way.
And then let's move on and see what the plans are. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Coming back, we'll have Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Right now, though, we'll take a break for WWL First News.
Thank you, Courtney. I'm Dave Cohen. Let's get back to Tommy Tucker now on WWL.
Making our way through this Monday morning, December 22nd. You got all your shopping done? You ready for Christmas?
I placed my final online order last night.
You going to get it in time?
Yeah, I'll be here by Tuesday.
Okay. What'd you get me?
It wasn't for you. It's for my wife.
All right. What is it?
Why? That would ruin the surprise. And
oh, we don't want
she's
that.
She's listening.
Happen. Okay. She like romantic items, or does she like more practical items?
A little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she sometimes wants something that she needs, and other times I get her something that she wants or will enjoy, whether she thinks she wants it or not.
Are you good at getting gifts or not?
Hit or miss. Some years I score, some years I don't do so well.
Yeah, I don't think I'm so good at it. Give me a text here, 504-260-1870. Are you a good gift giver or not? I tried to help a friend out by saying, your husband, he doesn't really know what it is that you want this year, so maybe he knows. So that kind of
you were trying to get some ideas for yourself.
For him. I was trying to do him a solid by saying, talking to the wife, saying, he doesn't really know what he wants to get, what you want, so do you have any idea? Oh, he knows. So apparently she sniffed out the scam that was going on.
Did you finish all your shopping?
I did. All done.
Good.
Complete and totally done.
What'd you buy me?
You'll see when you open it. Jason Shields joins us as we come back, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. A lot of information out last week. We'll see what it means, financial information, when we return on WWL.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day. Yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of network busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Hi, 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Monday morning. That means time for Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Morning, Jason. How are you?
Good, Tommy. How are you, man?
Good to talk to you. Missed you the last couple of weeks. I had some vacation that I was getting out of the way, but I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to be back talking to you. You got everything ready for the holidays?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be, Tommy, because I'm not going shopping anymore.
You're done, right? That's it.
I'm done.
What is not shopped for is not going to be shopped for. A lot of financial data came out last week, a lot of economic data. What was it, and what did we learn from it, Jason?
Yeah, last week was a pretty good week for data folks, right? A lot of things lined up. So last week we got job data, inflation data, and spending data. That's three things that the economists love to look at as they determine the direction of the economy. And then also from the previous week, when we know the Fed cut rates by 25 basis points, we also got their notes as well as far as the direction of the economy. So it's a good wrap up for the year and a good kind of general projection of what we think 2026 is going to look like. And so I'll start with the jobs data that we got, because I really think that that's the one that everyone has a bit of a concern with, right? We know where inflation is. Jobs is always that wild card. And so what the most recent report showed was 64,000 jobs were added in November. So, you know, we've talked about this before. You really want to see it in that 125,000 range to really offset, you know, the thing. That's a good, healthy, flat number. But at the same time, what that shows is the unemployment rate rose to about 4.6. And so while we're hiring and that number still went up, what that tells us is it's kind of the same old story, what we've been expecting here, right? It's that the job market is cooling, but it's not collapsing, right? This is an orderly progression. And this is kind of what you're expected to see, right? Around in that 4% range is generally where the Fed considers what they call full employment, right? Meaning if someone were to want a job, they could get a job. It doesn't mean it's the job necessarily that they would want, but a job is available to them. So that's what you're seeing there from the jobs perspective is things tend to be going pretty good. Now, you know, the government was shut down. We know that that data has a little bit of noise, but in general, what we like to look at is that direction of the job market. So for the end of the year, job market's looking about in line with where the Fed thought it would be. So for inflation, that's the other key topic there. That's what we feel day to day. You know, Tommy, that's things get more expensive. That's the number we really care about. And so core inflation came in at about 2.6%. Now, that's a huge improvement from where we peaked a couple of years ago, but more importantly, the thing that we all look at and the Fed looks like when we step back is what's the direction? And that direction is starting to trend down. We're starting to get into that 2% range that the Fed's preferred thing is. And so that I would like to qualify this because this is always the Christmas conversation, right? It's like, well, you say inflation's going down, but everything still costs more. Mm-hmm. When inflation goes down, it just means things start costing more, less on a less rapid cadence, right? So, you know, 2.6% means things cost 2.6% more than they did last year. And so it's in general, things don't get cheaper. Inflation doesn't tend to reverse unless we're in a really not great economy. So I always like to tell everyone, yeah, it things are still more expensive. What we're really looking at is the trend for that one. So
let me ask you about inflation. When it comes to 2.6%, is that over what period of time? Because you said things are 2.6% more expensive than last year. Or is that by month? Or how do they measure that, Jason? I've always wondered about that.
Good question, Tommy, because we all like to quote that number and nobody really knows what it means, right? And so when we talk about that number, we're always looking at a year over year. So what were goods in November of 2024 and what are they in November of 2025? And now that number will continue to move. So we'll just keep comparing a year over year number. And that's generally what you look at when you're looking at those things.
I got you. All right.
And that's why the trend's somewhat important, too, because, you could have an anomalous month where something spiked. Pick your reason for whatever it was. But what we've done to look at is we look at it over a broader spectrum and then see where that direction is going. And so the other stuff we got was the Federal Reserve. They released, the famous dot plot that we always talk about, right, which is just all of the members of the Fed kind of anonymously showing on a picture chart where they think rates are going to be both at the end of this year, 26, 27, 28, much longer run. And then they also gave us their summary of economic projections. And in essence, this is where they think the economy is going over the next several years. And so the one thing that I thought that I thought was really interesting that changed from the September, because they released this quarterly projections, was the Fed actually raised its outlook for economic growth in 26. They raised it from a 1.8 to a 2.3 in December. And so that tells me that members of the Fed really are starting to feel confident in the direction that the economy is going. And that's really huge, Tommy, because if you look at it at the micro, there's a lot of noise, but these guys tend to pull back and look at the macro. And so that was one that I thought was really good. They also see unemployment sitting at about 4.4% in 2026. Why that's important is they say where we are in employment is probably where we're going to stay for the next year. And that's good, right? Because that means you're not going to see those big spikes according to their projections. And you can start to feel somewhat secure in your job and start finding the right job that you're supposed to be looking for as opposed to just the job that's available. So in general, I think that was a good mark on theirs. And then they also lowered their inflation outlook. So they said it's going to get to about 2.4 next year. So in general, that's pretty good. Now, the dot plot, the one everyone really cares about is, where do they see rates going? And in general, they see it about a 3.4% median rate when I average them all in at the end of 2026. And so they're not seeing tons of cuts coming forward. They're outliers that see many cuts. But in general, they're seeing maybe one, two cuts right now as where it's going to go. And that's good. That means that they're gradually easing and things are getting where they'd like them to be. So
what do we do with all of that information, Jason?
Yeah. So what do we do with it? In general, I think everyone should assume that rates are going to stay a little bit higher for a little bit longer. Not where we are high, Tommy, but it's higher than we remember the 2010s, those zero rate days, right? I think where you are is about where it's going to be. You may see some moves down a little bit in 2026, but it's going to be slow. It's going to be calculated. The other thing I tell everyone is to stay flexible, right? Know what your funds are, know what your money's doing for you, know what it's earning, know what the borrowing rates are. And just, I like to stay liquid at this time so that, if opportunity presents itself, it's something that you can quickly jump into and move along. But in general, I think everybody should just kind of look at this and say, I'm not going to call it soft landing, Tommy, but things are going in the directions that we expected so far. And as long as we keep on this trajectory, we're about where we need to be and things are going to kind of stay fairly consistent to that.
That's good news. We're going to let it go at that. Thank you, sir. Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, with some more financial insights you can count on it with Bank on It. 7:53, 7 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 8:15 now on this foggy Monday morning, December 22nd. Aaron Ashbrook joins us now, Assistant Professor of Peri-Urban Entomology at LSU. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Morning, Tommy. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. How is this weather going back and forth, the cold and the hot, affecting the mosquitoes, affecting moths, affecting everything else?
Yes, it's a very interesting question. And so what has been happening with this fluctuating temperatures is we actually see that, of course, the insects are more dormant. They're not very active when it's colder out. But then when we see these temperature increases up into the 70s, all of a sudden the adult insects are becoming active and they are migrating again. And so that's what we're starting to encounter, is these insects trying to come into warmer locations. when they have an opportunity.
So when it comes to moths, I see them inside the house. Is there a way to keep them from getting inside the house, or ways to neutralize what they can do?
Yeah, so we are seeing a lot of moths coming around the structure, and essentially light. So if we can turn off lights at nighttime, that's usually what is luring them to our structures. And, of course, it's the warmth as well. So they're trying to come nearby our buildings, as well as many other insects, just to help offset some of those cooler temperatures. And so those two factors, those stimuli, is what's bringing them to enter our buildings.
So take me through the process. A moth is, tell me where we start here. A caterpillar starts with we start with a caterpillar?
Yes, and then... you're right. So a caterpillar is an immature moth. And so right now, you know, towards the end of the year is where all of our insects that are, that have survived, of course, and have developed through caterpillars and have gone through their pupae, their developmental stage, and then become moths, adult moths, they are now, of course, the most prevalent stage if they're alive, right, if they're able to survive the cold. And so all of those moths, those caterpillars that survive through the summer, they're active when the temperatures are enabling them to be mobile, and that's when we're starting to encounter them.
So what's going
on in our structures?
So what's going on with the mosquitoes? Because I'm always curious about how the cold weather affects the mosquitoes, and are they getting worse? And then it's different kinds of mosquitoes. Take me through that whole thing, if you will.
Yes, that's also another very good question. And so around this time of the year, we get more cold, we get more rain. And of course, because we don't have the warm weather to cause some evaporation effects with that water, we'll have more standing water. And of course, standing water is what contributes to mosquito populations. Now, when we have these warm weather influxes, if it's warm for more than 3 to 5 days consecutively, we can have mosquito emergence. And of course, we've had earlier this year, we did have a pretty bad mosquito emergence. I think early, it was either January or February, because it kind of similar to what we're experiencing now. We had cold weather, it warmed up, we had a burst of mosquitoes, and then it cooled off again. And so we can experience these same kinds of effects right now.
But there are different, like, saltwater mosquitoes that are affected differently by the weather, right?
Yes, that is correct. And so certain mosquitoes are more likely to be active at these times rather than our normal mosquitoes that are active during the summertime.
What about roaches? How does the weather, cold or warm, affect roaches?
So luckily, we should experience some relief from the cockroach population. So when it is cold, essentially, our American cockroaches cannot be active. They require warm temperatures above 70 to be coming out on the surface and to forage. And then even to fly, they need it to be very warm out. So you won't even see cockroaches flying when it's cold. So at least we should get some reprieve from them.
Is there anything that happens at this time of year that has anything to do with termite season?
So termites are still going to be active, but they're not going to be very active. So you might still be able to find them foraging, but you're not going to see any swarming activity, particularly during this time of the year. Although we can see some species that will swarm, but it's just much less likely. Well, what I will say is, even though we're not under the pest umbrella, one thing that we should see a lot more activity of is rodents. Rodents definitely want to be trying to come in to our structures during the colder weather.
Let me take a break, because we're going to pick it up with rodents when we come back, and because I'm getting some text about that, and it's funny you should bring that up, as somebody texted in about rodents, because they think they have a mouse problem in their home, or they don't know if it's rats or how to tell or how to neutralize the issue and so forth. We're talking to Aaron Ashbrook, an assistant professor of urban, peri-urban entomology at LSU. We'll move on to rodents when we come back. 820 Traffic Now, WWL.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
A27, talking to Aaron Ashbrook, assistant professor of urban, peri-urban entomology at LSU. What does that mean, peri-urban entomology, Aaron?
A perimeter of the urban environment. That's the best way I can describe it. It was a challenge for me to discover that one when I first started the job, since I'm used to urban.
To keep the things that are outside from coming inside, that kind of thing?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And then the pests that are around the home and the structure that also bother us, but that aren't primarily indoors, but still are a nuisance.
So when it comes to rodents, do they seek the warmth? Is that what happens? Why do we have more of a problem during the wintertime, it seems like, with rodents? Or do we?
We do. That's a good question. So they don't hibernate. So the rodents, they need to seek warmth in order to survive during the winter period. Also, during when it's warm out, they can get food outdoors. That might not necessarily be the case during the wintertime. And so they're also coming indoors for food as well. And so those are the two reasons we start to see more interactions with them.
So what can people do to minimize rodents coming into the house? Because it only takes a second, right? I mean, you got a door open for a second, and that little rascal can sneak in there.
Yes, that's right. They're very fast. And so, keeping your doors closed, that's a big one right there. Oftentimes, you may see a door just being cracked just for a moment. And like you said, that's all that it takes.
Because even if, for example, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but if you leave the garage door open for a second while you're bringing groceries in, if a mouse comes in that's pregnant, before you know it, you got an infestation, right?
That's right. They do reproduce very quickly. Only a few weeks, they can have a litter. And those mice, it takes them about a month or so, and they can be full-blown adults and foraging themselves. The other big way you can help prevent them from coming indoors is exclusion. And so mice, they can enter gaps that are a quarter of an inch, one-fourth of an inch, so they can kind of compress their bodies and enter these cracks and crevices. And rats can enter crevices that are about a half of an inch in diameter. So those two, if you can find those cracks and crevices, whether that be a doorway, a window, some kind of gap, and seal it using appropriate foam and meshing, steel wool material, that can help prevent rodents from coming in as well.
Is there a preferable way when it comes to solving the problem once it happens? I'm being as delicate as I can here, Aaron.
Yes, yes. Definitely using some type. I prefer using snap traps. Mm-hmm. I know some people like to use the glue boards, but of course, snap traps, they're a little bit more, they're quicker than having a rodent stuck on a glue board.
Yeah. I know one of the things you learn as you grow up. Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate your time. Aaron Ashbrook, very informative as always, assistant professor of urban peri-urban entomology at LSU. One of the things you learn as a grown-up is that the snap trap doesn't work like it does in the cartoons where it grabs them by the tail and then they go, oh, hi, let me out. That's not the way it works at all. 8:30, we'll talk to Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. All right, everybody, check yourself here, all right? Calm down. I'm not criticizing. I'm not making fun. I'm just trying to understand what the plan is.
Okay.
The plan is for the governor to talk Greenland into giving up their sovereignty and becoming a member of the United States. I'm being serious here. That's what the plan is?
Yeah, Governor Landry says he is honored to serve as a volunteer to help make Greenland part of the U.S. after President Donald Trump appointed him special envoy to Greenland.
Is there any connection between the governors we know it in Greenland at all? Or
I'm not aware of him having any ties to, influence over, or even having taken trips to Greenland, but I don't know. This all developed over the weekend, and we're awaiting more information. But the governor did post that this will not interfere with his serving as governor of Louisiana. But President Trump, he's been urging this now for a while, and he has invited Greenland to join the U.S., saying we'll make you richer,
we'll
make you safer,
and
we'll make you better.
We need new flags, wouldn't we?
Well, if they became a state, we'd need a 51st star, I guess.
Yeah. I just wonder.
You think Greenland to become a state before Puerto Rico or Guam?
Well, then we need really more flags then. Then you need to redesign the entire thing.
Might stay with 13 original colonies, so the stripes don't change. Just the just the stars.
The stars, yeah. All right, well, let's take a break. We'll pick it up, talk to Billy Nungesser. We come back about he and the governor having a little brouhaha, if you will, about the immigration raids and how it's affecting the economy. We'll also talk about the Rose Bowl Parade. So a lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, WWL. A46, 14 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Every now and then, an elected official will say something that will get your attention. And in this case, we're talking about Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, who joins us now. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. How are you?
I'm doing good, my friend. How are you?
I'm all right. And this is what you said. I think the far left and the far right have to take a chill pill. Amen to that. Can everybody just re-freaking lax for a second, huh?
I'm telling you, buddy. You know, there's a great little video out about Unite America that 87% of Congress is elected by 10% of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
Something's wrong with that.
Yeah. Tell me what's going on with the immigration raids and your thoughts on that and what you're hearing from business owners. Because here's my thing, Billy. I said when all of this started, like they started with 5,000 people. It's like, well, I don't know where the 5,000 came from. And secondly, who's going to do what those 5,000 people are doing now was my question. I just look at it from a practical standpoint. I'm not saying you should be in the country illegally. I'm not saying criminals shouldn't be arrested. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that from a practical standpoint, if you got 5,000 people that are working and you arrest them, then that's 5,000 people that aren't going to work and 5,000 people that need to do those jobs, right?
Right. That's why I said, you know, And here's the thing. Somebody needed to speak out and say the people with work permits, the rumor is that they're taking them. They're not reissuing new work permits right now. And they're holding them till they expire. And then they're deporting them and they got to start over.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's true or not. Nobody wants the criminals here. But it just seems like somebody, before you send a bunch of people in town and start beating on people's doors and dragging them out of cars, that you come up with a clear definition of what's going to be done and what's right and wrong. Because the hotels, the restaurants, the home builder associations, all of them are saying even the legal people here are not going to work. And one family, their children are not coming in from New York. They're citizens because some of the citizens that have been detained for several days before they let them go. They don't want their children arrested coming into this city. So it's just some clarity's got to be made by somebody in authority.
So it's kind of like guilty until proven innocent almost, huh?
That's what it seems for a lot of people. And it's, you know, if you, in my opinion, if you're coming here to get rid of the criminals, you don't announce it. You come in here and you go get the bad guys and get them out. So I just, the fear in the community right now, to people here that are not, you know, of a different nationality, that are citizens, are scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they're scared they're going to be arrested and detained till they can prove they're citizens. And that's just not right.
You're a business guy. Tell me what you're hearing from business owners and tourism people.
A lot of the contractors, landscapers, and like, you know, the hotels, their people are legal here on work permits, but they're not coming to work for fear they're going to be held till their work permit expires and then deported. And if they're really not issuing no new work permits at this time, tell somebody why and how long is this going to go. Because if they're not renewing these work permits for people, that is going to be a big void in the workforce for home builders, construction, farmers, hotels, restaurants, all those jobs they fill with those work permits.
Let me take a break. I want to talk to you about the Rose Bowl Parade when we come back. By the way, it looked like you're dropping some weight. I saw you on TV earlier, are you?
Well, yeah, I've been on that shot, so it works really good.
It does. All right, man, hang on a second. All right, we're talking to Billy Nunn, guest there, 850, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:56, 4 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, who I saw you on TV today talking about the Rose Bowl Parade. Tell me about the float.
Yeah, this year the theme is magic and teamwork, and our teamwork is building a pot of gumbo from the crops we grow, the seafood, the spices, the chefs, everything great that comes out of Louisiana to make that pot of gumbo. It takes a great team. Mike Strain, our air commissioner's wife, will be riding on the float.
Oh, Willie.
And besides promoting tourism, we're going to be bringing all Louisiana products out there to promote all the great things that come out of Louisiana.
Tell me about the benefits that Louisiana gets from that, if you will, Billy.
Yeah, we spend between $500,000 and $600,000, and we get $50 million in ad value. 6.1 billion people were reached last year. The social media coverage is incredible. And then we saw a 35% increase in traffic to our website, people looking to visit Louisiana. Because, you know, at the end of the year, you're talking about, I'm always going on a diet, and where are we going to go on vacation? So it's a great time of the year to put Louisiana in front of the world.
Tell me about tourism this year, and, you know, it's got off to a terrible start with the New Year's attack, but did that affect anything throughout the year, Billy, or did we recover from that?
I really think the great job that state police and the police did for Super Bowl and Sugar Bowl and Mardi Gras really kind of put people at ease. The 51st state with the president made about Canada has killed our Canadian business. We went up there, had dinner with the travel agents. We served Tabasco ice cream at the train station. They loved the Louisiana, but they said, we'll lose our jobs if we try to promote any city in America right now.
Wow.
It's just the attitude of the Canadians. And then some of the visas and things in other countries have caused some cutbacks in those other foreign visitors. And the foreign visitors are very important to Louisiana, because they don't just go to New Orleans. They want to see how Americans live, and they get off the beaten path and visit many cities. So it's really, it's been a challenge with the international visitors that we saw double-digit increases up until this past year.
Tell me, before we let you go, what's on the agenda for 2026 for you?
Well, we're going to be promoting a lot of sports tourism, Olympic trials around the state. We're going to be doing a lot of tourism events all over. We're promoting the great outdoors of Louisiana. We've got a new bird trail, and we tell people you can fish anywhere, but you catch fish in Louisiana. So we're going to promote all the great things to do outdoors in Louisiana next year. and we're looking forward to a great year.
What you got planned for Christmas, my friend?
Staying home with the family, relaxing, taking one day off, and then getting back to work.
I hear
you. Heading out to Pasadena.
There you go. Have a good time. Thank you, sir.
Merry Christmas.
Pleasure as always. Merry Christmas to you. Billy Nunn, Gessel, Louisiana Lieutenant Governor. We're going to take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Andrew Schwartz, our friend, professor of IT in the EJ USO, that is how it's pronounced, College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. He's recently been focusing his attention on AI. We'll talk about AI, artificial intelligence, and how it's changing how shopping is done. I'll also give you the answers to our question, our survey question this morning. And the answers have been pretty good that I've been getting. The question has been asking you, what's something you could say to your holiday company about their pet that could mistakenly, they would mistakenly think you were talking about their kids and get their feelings hurt? I'll tell you when we come back.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Thank you, Courtney. I'm Dave Cohen, WWL First News. Now back to Tommy Tucker on WWL.
Here are the results of our Taking It to the Text survey. I normally distribute them, but I forgot to do that, so I'll have to give them all myself. So what we do is we ask a question of the audience, right?
Right. Yeah, question.
6 o'clock, we ask a question.
Survey, poll.
A survey, a poll, if you will, and then we share the most popular slash more creative one, so it's a chance to take the pulse of the audience and also to see how creative they are, right?
Sounds good to me.
So that's what we do. So the question this morning happened to be, what is something you could say to your holiday company about their pet, that they could mistakenly think you were talking about their kid and so it would hurt their feelings?
Someone's coming to your house.
Somebody's at your house.
Kids and their pets.
They bring their kids and their pets, and then I make a comment. It's about your pet, but they would mistakenly think it was about the kid
and be offended.
And be offended. That's right. Yeah, that's where the offense comes in, because okay, they would be offended. So some of the answers that have come in, I think number 8 or whatever number this would be, I think he needs a bath. 8. I think he needs a bath. Another one here.
Don't say that about the kid.
Do they always smell like that?
Oh, yeah. Shouldn't say that about somebody's kids.
No. Here's an interesting one. Is it a boy or a girl? Another one here. Do you know who the father is?
Why would you ask that about their pet?
I guess to see if it's, you know, what kind of dog it is, right?
Okay.
Are their eyes the same color?
Yeah, you wouldn't want a cur kid, but a cur pet is okay.
Yeah. And then there's this one. If he doesn't shut up, I'm going to put him out.
That one's actually kind of entertaining, yeah.
Oh, and the others were crap? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying.
Well, no, I think that's what you did say, as a matter of fact.
Particularly if it's really cold. You know, you wouldn't want to put someone's children outside in
Somebody
the cold.
Actually texted that in and said, if he doesn't shut up, I'm going to put him outside. So yeah. Thanks to whomever texted that in, because, you know, you basically saved the bit. I thank you. Thank you, Dave, because we were taking on a lot of water.
It's been a long 4 hours.
We're taking on a lot of water. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We're taking on a lot of water.
We finished on a high note, though, yes.
And then all of a sudden, somebody came in and hit the bilge.
Bailed us out.
Hit the bilge button.
The bilge pump, yes.
Right. And kept us afloat. Thank you, Dave. Andrew Schwartz joins us now, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years, and he's recently been focusing his attention on artificial intelligence. How you doing, professor?
Fantastic. Happy holidays. How are you?
Same to you, sir. Tell me about, for people that don't know, we throw the term AI around, about artificial intelligence. What exactly is that?
Sure. So artificial intelligence is a technological system that takes data, it learns from that data, and then extrapolates that data when we query it for additional questions or to provide insights into the data that we provided to the system.
So when it comes to companies that provide artificial intelligence, this is where I get a little bit confused. Are there top three companies? Does Google provide companies? Is there a difference between artificial intelligence and a search engine? Or if I go into the phone and I just open and I have an iPhone and I open the Safari browser, I guess it is, and I say, tell me about cooking gumbo. And I just put that in and I get a text and it says, AI overview, gumbo is a rich, heavily seasoned, blah, blah, blah. Where did that come from?
Sure. So there's different types of artificial intelligence. The one that we're used from the consumer perspective lately has been generative AI. And that's things like ChatGPT, or if you go into Facebook and you look for somebody, it says Meta AI. That's AI that's embedded within Facebook. And then so Meta has some, and Google, for example, like you just brought up, instead of searching for something now, you can go and ask Gemini to find it for you and not have to go through all those different searches.
So wait, let me slow you down for a second. So when I went to Google just now, that was a feature of Google called Gemini. That was the artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so they have a product by the back end of that called Gemini.
Okay.
So it historically, what happened when you search, it would give you all those search results. Now you see that it summarizes those for you. So what it's doing is it's using artificial intelligence to go to those websites and summarizing those for you.
So is anybody vetting any of that? Because this tells me about, you know, I just threw the gumbo question in there, it just popped into my head. Key components, holy trinity, protein, blah, 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 blah. Is anybody vetting this to make sure that it's accurate? Or is this just what the Gemini has amassed from all of the different things that, for whatever reason, this Gemini server, I don't want to hurt myself using the wrong term, has heard about gumbo?
So each of the different platforms that we use, whether it's ChatGPT or Gemini, or you may hear of Claude or Anthropic, each of those different platforms trains their systems or their algorithms on different data. So the summary that you're finding is based upon what Gemini has chosen to train its data upon. And you raise a really good point, however, which is there's no human in the loop. So what happens if Google was never trained on what is gumbo? Well, if it was never trained on that particular perspective, then it would make it up. And we call that a hallucination. So a hallucination is when the data, the system was never trained on the data or the question being asked of it.
Tell me that part again.
So if a system wasn't trained on a particular set of data, then it'll basically make it up or hallucinate. But the challenge, however, is that the system doesn't know what it doesn't know.
Okay. I also put in, what should I get my father for Christmas? And it said, for Christmas gifts for your dad, focus on his hobbies, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, it also recommends specific items that are brand specific, not generic, you know, like a grill. It mentions this grill or that grill or the other grill, which makes me wonder, well, wait a minute now, it's artificial intelligence, but it's actually selling me a product, right?
So to this point, we haven't reached the point yet where AI can operate like a Facebook or a Google. So if you have a Facebook feed and you scroll through that, you see you're always being offered up advertisements. And Meta actually does use artificial intelligence to predict what they think that you would like based on demographic information and where you live and basically how you interact with it. However, to this point, we haven't hit the point yet where AI has been advertisements the similar way that we have inside of Facebook or inside of Google.
So it's not pushing me on a specific product?
Not yet, but the partnerships are headed in that direction. If you look earlier this year, you see that Walmart actually signed a deal with OpenAI for ChatGPT. So if we think about it kind of historically, if you're a business owner, one of the big trends was search engine optimization, or SEO. With search engine optimization, when you put something in Google as a consumer, the business was trying to elevate their ranking so that they appeared first in the search rankings. However, increasingly, just as you said, we're going to AI. So what we're going to see over the years ahead is a move towards AI search optimization, which is how can we put products within OpenAI, within ChatGPT, that would align with what we want.
So how is that changing the way people shop? I'm trying to understand this, Professor, but you got to go slow because, you know, I'm having a hard enough time with my real intelligence, let alone artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. So let me give you an example. So I have four kids, 20 to 16. So my son, my 20-year-old, is an avid college football fan. He loves it. Every single Saturday, that's where he's planted watching college football. I'm sure no one here can relate to that scenario.
No, not at all.
Just like everyone else, we're hit with the rise of streaming costs, right? So Hulu is $110 this month, and so he wants his own account. So, you know, it seems a bit excessive for me. So I decided to go to ChatGPT, and I said, my son is a college football fan. Give me an idea of how I can create a lower-cost structure of streaming for him so he can watch the games. And ChatGPT said, create a combination of ESPN Plus, Paramount, and Peacock. It then said, well, the problem with that is that you're going to miss conferences like the Mountain West or, you know, maybe the Division II games. So it was able to lead me to a decision without me having to sit there and do all the research to find the annual costs and figure out what the cheapest alternative would be.
But the cynical part of me thinks that that's not really in my best interest, that, you know, it's the old thing about if it's too good to be true, it is, or it's not. I guess, Professor, what I'm thinking there is that there's somebody behind the scenes somewhere that's trying to game me into doing this or doing that, and you're saying that's not where we are now?
So you raise a really good point as well, which is the need for legislation around this. Because the truth is, we really don't know how these systems are being trained. Because to this point, generative AI companies haven't been made to tell us how they're training all of these models. So if you actually do the research deep within technical documents and white papers, Google Gemini will tell you that they basically trained it on proprietary data. Well, I don't know what that is. So if I don't know what that is, how can I know what is coming out of the system? So what I do personally is I use a combination of multiple different approaches to see. So I'll go back and verify afterwards. So I'll use AI as my first approach, but I never take myself out of the loop or trust it completely. And I think that really is the key to artificial intelligence moving forward, which is we're not trying to take people out. We're trying to make our jobs and our lives easier.
Because even at that, with what it told you, even though there's nothing nefarious at play, it could just be wrong and not be giving you the best assortment of streaming services that you could have, right?
Absolutely. So I usually take it one step further. Once it gives you my answer, I say, provide me the evidence or the proof or the links to where you've just arrived at your decision. And so it would point me to the platforms and the areas that help me to so that I could verify myself. And this is why I've been really key on pushing the term co-intelligence, which is that AI is not there to replace you. It's to make you smarter and to act on your behalf to make your life better.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I find this fascinating. You know, Professor, I can talk to you for 12 hours about this and understand about 3 hours of it, but that's all right. That's why you're on. And to try to help us understand artificial intelligence, Andrew Schwartz, our guest, Professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU, been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years and has recently been focusing his attention on AI. And, Professor, AI goes back how far?
The 1940s.
So there you go. We'll be back in a flash, WWL.
With deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Don we now our gay up.
It is 9:27. We're talking about artificial intelligence with our friend Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. So let me go to Gemini is Google, professor. I got that right?
It is indeed. Good job.
All right, so let me go here and say, what should I get the professor for Christmas? And it's going to give me an answer for a thoughtful, appropriate Christmas gift for a professor. Focus on small, useful, or consumable items like quality coffee, tea, nice pens, desk accessories, or a sincere personalized card, keeping it modest in price, around $20 to $30, to show your appreciation without being extravagant. At heartfelt notes are often valued most. Would that fit you or not? Was that a good answer?
Pretty close. I love a good note, that's for sure.
So the reason I ask that is this just an innocuous thing where it's like, okay, it'll help you figure out what to get somebody? Or, because I'm getting a lot of text about this, people concerned about losing their jobs. What I did just now, that's not a thing that's going to cost anybody their job, right? I mean, that just helps me out.
It does just help you out. But the reality is that AI is going to be transforming industries and jobs, and that part is true. The good news is what we've seen to this point is that job loss hasn't occurred due to AI. But what we are seeing is that people are taking jobs as people are leaving, and they're replacing them with technology. And then they're rehiring people for better jobs that are better paying. So we've actually seen so far a lot of it's neutral in terms of the evidence, but we've not seen the mass layoffs and the mass firings that we were concerned with regards to AI.
Knowing you were coming on, it popped into my mind as I was talking to the drug company about, you know, with this prescription getting filled or that one, and it was a call service center. And I'm not trying to be mean here or inappropriate or anything, but the person didn't speak English very well, and that is my native tongue. And we were having a hard time, especially when it comes to names of these medications, trying to figure out what was approved, what was not approved, et cetera, et cetera. Is that like a customer call center? Is that the kind of thing that AI could lend itself to and maybe be beneficial, while maybe people in this country wouldn't lose their job? And again, I'm not trying to be political about this at all. I'm just trying to be practical about it, where it could be beneficial to everybody, where it would enhance the communication process.
Absolutely. So I was talking to a Fortune 50 bank about their use of AI, and I said, well, what are you doing? And it's going to be brought to the call center, because that was the number one place. And I said, all right, that means that you're going to use AI and that you're going to take away jobs, and why we don't need people to call center anymore, right? And that's what my inclination was, right? Mm-hmm. And their perspective was actually quite the opposite. What they employed AI to do is, you know how every time you call in, and we all love those press one for this, press two for that. And I particularly love how it says the menu options have changed. Like I memorized your menu options, right? So if you think about it, instead of doing that, imagine if we could use natural language to actually say what you're trying to do. And that's what the bank did.
Use what, so, professor? What language?
It's called natural language, okay. the language that we speak.
Okay.
So you could say, for example, I want to deposit money from my checking to my savings account. Well, we can all agree that you shouldn't have to pay a call center employee to do that. So what they did is they actually took a lot of the common questions, and they allowed people just to ask the question themselves. And then by the time you hit the employee at the call center, you've already exhausted the easy issues, and they can just troubleshoot the hard ones. And what they found is that their customers actually got happier, and the call center employers got happier, because they didn't have to do rote kind of things like just transferring money. Mm-hmm. So it actually made the bank more efficient in the end.
What do companies have to do now, both large and small, to put themselves in the best position? Because it would seem as though this is a very, obviously, business is a very competitive atmosphere. If your competition is ahead of the game when it comes to AI, then they're going to have a distinct competitive advantage over you, are they not?
They are indeed. So the first thing you need to do is begin by identifying a very easy use case, a pilot case. What is something where you could see that could be very easily automated with AI, where it's not that it would lose jobs, but it would make your company better and make your employees better? So begin with simply identifying that use case and then pilot it and try. And what you'll find is through experimentation, you'll learn how to do things better and you'll grow as a company overall.
It would seem like inventory, the AI would lend itself toward inventory, yes or no?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So for years, we've always thought about the concept of predictive analytics. And predictive analytics was based upon everything in the past. How can I take advantage of the future? But analytics kind of had some limitations. It really wasn't predictive always in the best way. It didn't take into account a lot of externalities. AI can take into advantage a lot more externalities of what's going on in the world around us. So you're able to predict a lot stronger using AI now.
Is AI taking over jobs now?
Not yet. I know that if we listen to the words of like Andy Jassy and some of the people in Silicon Valley, they're saying how it's as good as an entry-level position. In practice, however, we're not finding that to be true.
What does that mean, as good as an entry-level position?
We could take over someone's job who would be at an entry-level kind of position. Mm-hmm. The reality is, however, in practice, we haven't found that to be true yet.
Give me an example of an entry-level position where AI could or potentially take over when it comes to like being some type of administrative clerk or something, or what?
Yeah, let's think about medical coding or like a court transcriber, something that is simply like very transcription-oriented, that's very document-heavy, or searching for documents, things like that, where AI could do discovery for you on that behalf. There's even been concerns about paralegals, for example, digging into court cases and looking for precedents. But there's a prime example. I can tell AI all I want to about what court case I'm trying to pursue, but the reality is that you go to law school to understand that the law is nuanced, and there's a lot of nuance in the law and precedents in the law, so AI can't always rely upon that.
Well, Westlaw, and I don't mean to make it specific to law, but that's been around for a long time in terms of precedent, right?
Oh, absolutely. And there's been a lot of precedents before. What kind of makes me laugh is a lot of times we think that the world is coming to an end with technology. And if we look back, when Wikipedia came out, a lot of us said, that's the end of how we learn. That's the end of encyclopedias. And that never happened. So really, we have to think about AI and put it in the proper perspective.
Because when you see attorneys in the movies going to the big row of law books, that's not factual at all. Now they just type it, right? I mean, they just type it into
Absolutely.
The screen and it comes back, et cetera. So before we let you go, for people that are terribly concerned about AI heading into 2026, if I were to talk to you on December 22nd of 2026, what kind of advances will we have seen in AI?
Great question. So, of course, I'm not a futurist, but I can give some ideas of where
I think
we're
going. But you can see where it's going, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. You brought up regulations. We saw last week how the president signed a new order that said that states aren't allowed to legislate AI. I expect that to be a big issue as we move into 2026, and we'll see if any states try to move in that direction or not, and what happens when they do. So expect that. That, especially here in Louisiana, where the courts just struck down our approach to regulate social media for minors. So expect the courts to play an outsized role in AI in the year ahead. Expect the models to get better. Expect to see more AI in your life. Right now, if you have an Apple phone, AI is part of it. It's going to continue to be part of it as well. So expect to see it more and more part of your day-to-day life.
Tell me about state regulation real quick again.
Yeah, so the president basically issued an executive order that said no state is allowed to regulate AI. It has to be done at the federal level.
And the reason now, the rationale for that?
That if we have a patchwork of different laws, which kind of is where we're at right now, it's what's happening is it's holding back innovation because of the way that it's being legislated. Right now, the companies are having to figure out state-by-state legislation, and it's holding them back in terms of development.
And the only way to enforce that would be through some type of geofencing, I'm guessing, right?
Absolutely, which is why state-level legislation doesn't ever work. If you look at what's happening, for example, when you try to legislate things like social media, all that people do is use VPNs to pretend like they're not where they are. That's why state-level regulation of technology never works.
Any final thoughts, Professor?
Happy holidays, and enjoy those non-AI moments with your family. Hug someone special and enjoy that special time with them.
Thank you, Professor. We're done. Our business is concluded. They were telling me something in my ear, but we're good. Thank you, sir. And I'll send you that personal note.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. All right, 9:37. We'll take a break. Come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. So honored to have Tyler Bridges on. I get choked up when I mention your name. Tyler, how you doing?
Hey, Tommy, I don't want you to, choke.
Tyler Bridges, staff writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, author of several books, and he is a talented author. You can go to tylerbridges.com to find out more about the books that he has. And they make excellent Christmas gifts, and they're fun reads. They really are. Before we get to Helena Moreno and compare and contrast with what Buddy Romer faced, let's talk about this Greenland thing, if we can, Tyler, because I don't know, is there any substance to this, or is this just style? What's going on with the governor in Greenland and the appointment from President Trump?
Yeah, so this was a total surprise. It came last night, the announcement from the president that he is appointing Governor Landry to be a special envoy to Greenland. You know, the United States wants to take over Greenland, or President Trump wants to take it over. So the first question is, what does this mean for Governor Landry? And he put out a tweet saying, hey, I'm continuing as governor. This is a volunteer job. But it's a complete mystery why he would choose Governor Landry for this position. Governor Landry has no foreign experience at all. I don't even think he's traveled very much overseas. But he is certainly someone who's very loyal to the president, and we know that the president values loyalty more than anything else.
And I know the only Venn diagram I could draw would be minerals, right? I mean, in a way, because that's where the interest is with Greenland.
Well, it is seen as an important place as a Arctic shipping lane, and you know, it's very close to Russia. But one thing that we should note, Tommy, is that officials in Greenland and Denmark are angry at President Trump's decision last night to announce the governor as his special envoy. They are fearful that this means that the Trump administration is stepping up its efforts to try to take over Greenland, which only has 57,000 residents, but it's a huge mass of land.
Maybe it's the navigation of waterways. Maybe that goes in the Venn diagram as well. Tell me what Helena Moreno is facing and how it compares and contrasts with what Buddy Romer was facing. I saw your story that you wrote at NOLA.com that really interested me as you compared and contrasted the two.
Yeah, so in 1987, Buddy Romer was the longest of long shots, a little-known congressman from the Shreveport-Bossier area, and rocketed from last place to win the governor's race. And when he took over, he found out that the budget situation for the state was much worse than he had realized, that the Edwards administration, you know, he defeated Edwin Edwards. And so the Edwards administration disclosed privately right after the election that the state could go broke by the time Romer took office in March of 1988. And so it was a very interesting situation where the outgoing governor, Edwin Edwards, allowed the incoming governor, Buddy Romer, even before he took office, to essentially take over the budget and begin taking steps to deal with that budget crisis. And when Helena Moreno when I read of her election and the revelations about the budget crisis she's facing, it really struck me as sort of deja vu all over again, going back to 1987, 88, because as your listeners know, Tommy, Mayor Cantrell is bequeathing a big, big budget deficit for the incoming Mayor Moreno, and it's really a surprise. Mayor-elect Moreno has already begun to have to take steps working with the city council and also Governor Landry in the state to get $125 million short-term loan to be able to make payroll. But there are very similar parallels between, again, what Governor Romer inherited in 1988 and what Helena Moreno is about to inherit on January 12th.
What about the politics of it? How did Buddy Romer go about navigating the politics of it to get some kind of consensus between Republicans and Democrats? And what kind of similarities are there or differences with Helena Moreno?
Yeah, it's a great question. Buddy Romer, he had taken over. He defeated the then unpopular Governor Edwards, who was in Governor Romer's. His saying was, slay the dragon. Let's do the Romer Revolution. So as an incoming governor, he had a big, big political honeymoon behind him and a public wanting to make changes and legislators who were receptive to the changes that Governor Romer wanted to make. And I think Helena Moreno is facing a similar situation. She has very good relations with the current city council that has already begun to make changes to reduce the budget deficit, and also with the new council that will take office with her. And she's a person who knows how to work with her fellow elected officials, and I think she benefits from the unpopularity of Latoya Cantrell. I think a lot of people see the mayor-elect as a bright new face, and after things not going well under Mayor Cantrell. So I think the public and the city council are going to be supportive of the changes she's going to be trying to make to wrestle this budget gap into focus.
One thing that puzzles me, whether it's back then with Buddy Romer or now with Helena Moreno and Latoya Cantrell, is how there can be that much secrecy when it comes to budgetary policy and government money.
So that's another great question. And certainly with the current situation, I think it's hard to understand how the city council didn't have a better handle on that the city's finances were going in the absolute wrong direction. There were warning signs early on, and it seems to me that why wasn't the council digging into this? And I think it's particularly the new CAO for the city, the top appointed official for Helena Moreno, Joe Geruso. He's very well liked, but he was the budget chairman for the city council. Was he asking the tough questions that needed to be asked to ferret out that the budget situation for the city was getting so much worse? So, yeah, it's a hard thing to understand why no one else caught it.
Thank you, Tyler. I appreciate your time as always. I really do. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I in talking to people in New Orleans, I think people are very optimistic about the new mayor, and that seems like the city's heading in a new direction and that she's going to get the budget problems under control.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Tyler Bridges, a very gifted writer, staff writer for Times Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, author of several books. You can go to tylerbridges.com and see what they're all about. One of my favorites is Several Laterals and a Trombone, about the end of the Stanford UCLA game, Cal game, that's what it was, right, Cal game. 9:52 now, taking a break, WWL.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid, the audience is growing, but the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.